Sandy Talks Vegan. Thank you for joining me on this very special edition of the News Quiz Extra, coming all the way from Sheffield. The News Quiz Extra is an extended version of the show. So if you imagine the News Quiz as an invite to a wedding, the News Quiz Extra means you get to go to the reception, get stuck in the free bar and dance with Uncle Jeremy. Now, on with the show, or as they say in Sheffield, on with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz, coming from the City Hall in Sheffield. And we start with a cutting from the Aberdeen and North East News, read by Harriet Cass.
Scottish ski resorts say they need a level playing field to stop their business going downhill.
And our thanks to Dr. Marjorie Harper for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Sarah Milliken. And opposite them on my left, new to the News Quiz but not to Radio 4, it's stand-up comedian Tom Wrigglesworth along with Paul Sinha. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, who has been a less than fantastic Mr. Fox?
Well, this is little Liam, the pubescent militarist. He's a tiny man. If you know that Adam Werrity is 5'8", it gives you some idea of quite how small Liam is. And Liam has put his leader in a very difficult position. I think what Cameron needs to do is now constantly reshuffle the cabinet, moving Liam from one department to another, just to see if Adam Werrity's business interests can keep up. Oh, hi, Liam. I just thought I'd let you know I've started a new work and pensions consultancy. No, I decided to pack in the environment, food and rural affairs business. You know, it wasn't going very well. But I think it's all just a happy coincidence. I don't think there's anything romantic. I don't think it's a sexual relationship. Certainly, Liam Fox's wife hasn't noticeably been standing by him, which would indicate that. They're like inseparable teenage boys is what they're like. I reckon it's just that. And I bet Adam was upset when they got into power. Saying, well, what am I going to do? You're going to be off in London with all your minister pals now. Well, you're going to come with me. Am I really? Yes, you're coming with me everywhere I go forever and ever and ever.
What's the difference between Liam Fox and Nick Clegg? Anybody? Liam Fox has got one friend in politics. I quite like this. Number 10 has asked an internal inquiry to address all remaining questions. Well, it's going to be quite a long report, isn't it? Why is there always one odd sock left over? I had loads of remaining questions. Have you followed this, Tom?
I have, briefly, and I can't really understand how they get anything done, because if I took my best mate to any important meeting, we'd just be trying to make each other laugh all the time.
Are we sure he wasn't with the MOD? I mean, he was unarmed and in a foreign country when he wasn't supposed to be there. It just seems to me.
I like the fact that the friends of Liam Fox have now turned on Mr. Werrity. Together they're describing him as a Walter Mitty figure, which A, just reminds me that my dad could never tell the difference between Walter Mitty and Walter Matthau, which was amusing in the 1980s. And secondly, that would make, I think that would make Adam Werrity the world's worst fantasist. Because as I remember, Walter Mitty used to amaze people with his outlandish tales, whereas I am the advisor to the Defence Secretary is surely the world's worst boast.
Do you think he had homemade business cards? Yeah. But it wasn't quite spelled properly.
The ones that you can get in the train station. Yes. Yeah. And then you're going to have the massive ones that nobody ever has, but you can have them as wedding invitations instead.
How tragic would it be to do your wedding invitations on a machine at Sheffield Railway Station? It would be
tragic or thrifty?
Thrifty. Defence Minister Liam Fox is facing further questions over the role of his friend Adam Werrity. Despite not holding an official government position, Mr. Werrity arranged to meet Fox 18 times while he was on official business abroad. If only you'd had a BlackBerry, none of this would have happened. 2 points to Jeremy. Sarah, why are the new three R's going to be reading, writing and advanced engineering sponsored by Rolls-Royce?
This is the idea that 14-year-olds may be able to opt out of finishing school and go to tech colleges instead. Mm. A lot of kids these days think you can actually opt out of school at that age anyway and just don't bother going back. I know I opted out of PE because I needed a lot of perms. And I was just wondering if it's employed by the teacher so that they can just lump all of that lovely holiday together for 2 years at the end.
It's a good theory.
But they shouldn't... I mean, did you have excuses when you opted out of PE?
My mum used to just write a note to say that Sarah needed a perm.
Not a medical procedure, though, is it, really?
Well, I mean, if she hadn't said that and I'd had gastroenteritis or something like that, and then I went back in the next day, I'd have to make some excuse why gastroenteritis made my hair incredibly curly. So might as well just be honest. She just thought it was, I ran around a lot at home and I played out and stuff. I didn't need PE. And that's how I've got such a stick thin figure now. But I always had good hair, shut up.
Children shouldn't leave at 14, do we think? It's much too... Surely they've got other big, important decisions at that time. Choosing a name for their baby. Surely there are other things at 14.
There are chimneys to be swept, Sandra. It's basically, it's the reintroduction of Victorian idea of society, isn't it? That the poor go off and get killed in threshing accidents, while the rich walk around getting gout.
My dad had gout recently and my sister came home to find him googling gout.com and he shouted down the stairs, "I've never even bloody had pheasant." It's clearly all gout.com says.
I got gout and do you know what? I had decided to start drinking soya milk because I thought that's got to be better for you and it gave me gout. It should be like red wine, pheasant and lovely things like that. No, soya latte. It's a middle-class curse.
Apparently it was cheese. Oh. It's all he had as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, but you see, that's what I mean. It's something dull. It's not something... It's like, it is. Cauliflower apparently can give you...
No, shut
yes.
your face.
Gout and wind.
Cauliflower cheese. Wow, that's like a... That's like root one, gout. How to get gout, cauliflower cheese. But I thought one of the reasons for the 14-year-olds leaving school is so that the teachers don't, flirt with them and stuff, because you don't flirt with a 14-year-old. I mean, 16-year-old, fair enough.
You're making it sound like all the teachers are Silvio Berlusconi.
And I believe they're bringing in one of these technical colleges. Is that what they're called?
Well, they're going to be called University Technical Colleges because the word polytechnic is so 1970s.
Of course. But they're bringing one into Sheffield next year.
Are they?
Yeah. Which is fantastic because it'll mean, vocational qualifications for people just in time for the very last factory to slam its door shut.
I live in the same area of South London as you do, Jeremy. Most 14-year-olds appear to have completely opted out of school and would rather sit on the top of the bus that I'm sat on, eating their crisps very loudly and calling their mates gay. Now, obviously, which sets them up perfectly for government, but if we can give...
All South London 14-year-olds can start a car without a key.
The government have announced that up to 10,000 children will be able to opt out of school at the age of 14 to go to one of their new university technical colleges, which will focus on a range of practical subjects such as design, engineering and construction. The colleges will be backed by businesses such as Research in Motion, the makers of BlackBerry. Who will presumably hold lessons that break down after 5 minutes and fail to get the message across to anyone. So, 2 points to Sarah. Tom, why have the Iranians allegedly been less diplomatic than usual?
I don't know. Why have the... Is that a joke? Or... sort of rhythm of a joke, wasn't it?
It does have a rhythm of a joke. By the way, it works. I ask you a question and you give me an answer.
Okay.
I'm okay with I don't know as an answer.
We've
already established
point.
That Sarah's going to win, so...
why is the what, sorry?
Why have the Iranians allegedly been less diplomatic than usual?
Because they have allegedly tried to kill a Saudi diplomat. And the whole story is a little bit fishy and weird, and people aren't believing any of it, really, because Iran, if I can get my countries right, it's close enough, though, isn't it?
It's like having Rumsfeld is in the building. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're over there. But Iran and Saudi...
It reminds me of when George W. Bush went to South America for the first time. He was asked what he thought of it, and he said, it's fantastic. You know, they have all different countries down there.
Iran and Saudi have always had a bit of beef because of their Muslim crossover, something to do with brothers that split, or whatever the two different warring... Oh,
That'll be them now.
Ooh. That'll be...
Anybody want an ice cream?
They've got a player in the audience.
That'll be George Bush.
Is this
I'm doing a fantastic job.
I'll tell you what, irritable bowel syndrome is a lot more melodic in the north than it is in the south.
When I said that thing about turning the phone off...
Might not have been a phone.
Oh, could pacemaker it, with attitude.
Could have been.
Sorry, Tom, your very first question, and we've done nothing but interrupt you. I'm gripped to hear.
If anyone feels the need to play the bongos for a bit, can you get it out of your system now?
Well, Iran and Saudi Arabia have always had a bit of a to-do with their different beliefs of Islam. So, and it's not unusual for Iran to have a pop, but they tend to do it through more legitimate means. Apparently, they normally use Hamas or some other more skilled organisation. In this instance, they've been accused of hiring a Mexican used car dealer to have a pop at the Saudi diplomat, which is astonishing, as it is unbelievable, because it's the equivalent of us finding out that alongside Guy Fawkes in the gunpowder plot was Arthur Daly popped up there, because America are quite well known, of course, for having these false flag, you know, to cover up some sort of other story. They'll create a bit of a hubbub somewhere else to sort of drop the shoulder and make us all look that way. For example, you know, most of the Afghan war is filmed in Hollywood. We also know that the capture of Saddam Hussein was actually done with a green screen. There's nothing of this story that is believable or wholesome.
Well, apparently what gave the plotters away was talking on the phone about explosives and blowing people up. Do you not think just a little bit of a code, you know?
Maybe that was code for having an affair or something like that.
And the Iranian foreign minister condemned the accusation, saying, we do not want confrontation, before going on to say how much he likes The Simpsons. I mean, it's just... How would you kill an ambassador? What would you do? You put a bomb in his Ferrero Rocher. I wonder what's the...
If you're a state who's quite powerful and you can sponsor Hamas and Hezbollah, you'd think you could get somebody to whack somebody rather than have to go to the Mexican mafia, wouldn't you?
Wax.
Whack.
Oh, whack. Okay.
Whack somebody.
If you just wax somebody to death.
Tensions have escalated between the United States and Iran after two men were charged with allegedly hiring a Mexican drug cartel to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in Washington. Apparently, Iranian agent Mansour Arabasir lived undercover in the Texas suburbs as a used car salesman called Jack. His disguise was completely convincing, apart from his tendency to assassinate people who took too long on test drives. 2 points to Tom. Paul, why is a lack of peer pressure bad for our health?
In the interest of balance, it might not be bad for our health, but I think this is the NHS Reform Bill, Andrew Lansley's oh-so-popular attempt to reform the NHS, and by reform, I think he means dismember. Basically, a lot of people think this is privatisation by stealth. Mm. Andrew Lansley denies this, although he was, at the time, opening the Kentucky Fried Chicken Coronary Care Unit at the... the Queen Elizabeth II and bet365.com General Hospital. So it's, his argument was slightly weakened, and it's gone to the House of Lords. And the House of Lords, despite the fact that today a report says that this bill will affect most people who are old and infirm, the House of Lords, perhaps the one institution most heavily populated with this particular category, have passed this bill.
Well, you originally trained as a doctor, weren't you?
I was a GP for many, many years.
But we could, this is all about setting up competition, we could set up some competition for the NHS ourselves. We've got you're a doctor, Jeremy's practically human anaesthetic, so I think that's...
They're trying to give GPs more power. The GPs don't.
Did you say more power or more powers?
No, more power.
We're not waiting for mutants. Powers just sounds a lot more GPs exciting than it actually is, doesn't it?
In X-ray vision, they wouldn't have to stick their finger up your bottom.
And it took forever anyway at the House of Lords. I think, first of all, they had to find 800 large print versions of the bills.
They're not that old now, though, when you look at them. They're just every politician who's been disgraced or lost their seat in the last 30 years is now in the House of Lords.
No, the reason they're not that old is because you're getting older, love.
Oh, yeah.
This week, the House of Lords threw out an attempt to hold up the health and social care bill and a further amendment to block the bill altogether, meaning we are one step closer to the government's controversial NHS reforms. The government argue that competition will be good for the NHS. After all, when it comes to health, the important thing is that somebody's making money out of it. The bill will now go through to the next stage, where it will spend a week in Gary Barlow's house. Two points to Paul, and at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Sarah have got 4 points, but so too have Tom and Paul. We start round two with a cutting from the Daily Mail online.
Growth of the singleton supper. If you tend to eat by yourself, you're not alone.
Thanks to Nuala O'Sullivan for sending us that. Sarah, have a listen to this.
This is.
Shall I ask the question?
Oh, okay. I thought the music was the question.
Well, I think you could get it from the music. You could get it.
Ask the question, though.
But
no, please.
They pay me for asking. I've got to do this.
Oh, well, can I just give you a couple of pounds and we'll skip the question?
Yeah, go for it.
No, ask the question.
Sarah, who's finding the blackberry crumble hard to swallow?
Oh,
it was worth it,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it really wasn't. It really wasn't. Yes, this is the fact that there's been a global blackout on the blackberry for 3 days. Mm. Services are fully restored after a 3-day global blackout. Millions of customers worldwide got loads of work done and spoke to their partners.
There must be a massive email backlog now. Do you suppose that somewhere there's some fantastically rich African prince who can't understand why nobody's getting back to him? I suppose it's Steve Jobs meddling from the grave, do you?
One final thing he did before
Blackberry
he left.
Blackberry sat-nav mysteriously leading people to the Apple store.
I didn't know it was, because I've got a Blackberry, and I didn't know it was everybody's Blackberry. I just thought, oh, well, I'm 50, it must be me.
I wasn't affected, so I use an iPhone. I prefer Apple products. So with an iPhone, you know, you are completely in communication for the 15 minutes that the battery lasts for.
Do you do that? Oh, I can never get it right. Tweet, what is it? Which is it? Twittering. What's the correct? Do you Twitter? Do you
tweet?
Do you tweet? Well, I'm trying to ask Tom if he does that thing. Can you ask him for me?
Are you on Twitter, Flower?
Yeah.
Thank you. Are you on Twitter, Flower?
Sandy, it was as though you were in the room.
I'm going to say Flower to everybody. That's lovely.
Now on Radio 4, An Evening with Lord Denning. What is the telephone? Surely if people speak loudly and clearly, they shouldn't need a telephone.
You see, I miss telegrams. I'm old enough to remember. I miss telegrams. If people sent them, they'd think about it, wouldn't they?
Have you received yours from the Queen yet?
Do you not think if the message arrived with a small boy in a pillbox hat with something on a silver salver, you'd think, well, pay attention to that. That's not... Are you a Twitterer?
I'm a tweeter or a Twitterer. I'm a lot less obsessive than I used to be because 5 weeks ago I started my first television job. And since then, on a daily basis, complete strangers have been queuing up to write, Paul Sinha's neck is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Paul Sinha's face is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Paul Sinha looks like Benny from Crossroads. Paul Sinha looks like a fat Donny Osmond.
I thought I apologised about that.
So, see, I think you should update your CV there, though, yeah. Paul.
I feel really bad now, because I'm going through that whole list and thinking which one I most agree with. users have been demanding compensation after suffering 3 days where they had no access to the internet and were only able to text and make calls. It's like living in 2009. Lord Sugar is a BlackBerry user who is particularly unhappy. He had to resort to old-fashioned methods, setting fire to Amstrad computers to send smoke signals. People have gone on Twitter to complain about BlackBerry. I love this. It's the modern equivalent of drawing a chalk man to complain about cave paintings.
I found my old Amstrad in the loft and tried to donate it to the Oxfam in Streatham that takes computer equipment, and they wouldn't have it. They wouldn't have it. So I had to drive up to the other one, which is probably British Heart Foundation. I can't remember. There's a few charity shops. And I went in and I said, do you take computers? And they said, we take anything. So I put it down and ran as fast as I could.
Ones where everything was green. It was a green screen.
Yeah, it was a green screen, and you had to write on it with chalk. And when you wanted to print it, you had to get some greaseproof paper and trace over it, and then take a Polaroid of that, and that would be your hard copy.
You're just teasing now. Add 2 points to Sarah. Tom, who's saying, Doctor, Doctor, they're all making jokes at my expenses?
Now it does sound like a joke, doesn't it?
It is. It's that you need to do the answer bit of it.
Okay. The answer is that MPs are grumbling that the system in place following the expense scandal is too complicated and it's causing them to be mentally distressed. I know. And also that they're sick of being the butt of people's jokes. Mm. They're sick of being the butt of voters' jokes, in fact, which is worse, because in Sheffield, of course, we elected Nick Clegg, Right Honourable Member of Parliament, Sheffield Hallam, 2005 to 2015. And half the people didn't even vote for him because they couldn't get in. They were locked out of the polling office. So it's worse than they think. It's not just voters making fun. It's people who didn't actually have the chance to vote making fun. And I can't believe they have the audacity to demand sympathy. They were stealing money and they expect us to not joke about them. I mean, and they should be happy that we are joking about them. If they actually knew the truth of what we'd like to do to these people, then that would give them something to have some sort of mental problem about. I think, really, they should reform the system. So a politician should get his expenses back by putting all his receipts into a rucksack and then appearing live on Total Wipeout. If he falls into the water, that's fine. Some of the receipts, they'll be destroyed. He won't be able to claim. That's Total Wipeout for you, isn't it? You know, it's a gamble. If he gets to, once he's reached the other side of the assault course, the politician is then greeted by two doors. One door leads to the account department, who will refund the expenses. The other door leads to eternal hell. In front of each door, there is a guard. All we know is that one guard will tell the truth. The other guard will always lie. And that will confuse a politician because they don't understand the notion of truth.
I do think it's especially rich of some of the ones to complain about the jokes. I mean, those ones who claimed for duck houses and cleaning moats. I mean, they did 90% of the work for the comedians, didn't they? We just put the words in the right order. They
all did it. The thing is, I think the reason that we hate them so much for it is you are what you hate. That we know in their position that we'd be exactly the same. Come on, you know what you're like with free stuff. I can't walk away from the unused hot chocolate sachet in the hotel room. It's even shaped like a pocket. Do they think I'm mad?
Shaped like a pocket.
I've got obviously no sympathy at all with the MPs, but on the other hand, as a qualified GP, I know only too well that a lot of clinical depression is as a direct result of people being mocked and joked about. I saw this woman, very sad case, this married lady, who decided to go to the West Indies on holiday. And didn't ask her husband at all. She went of her own accord to Jamaica. And she had no idea whatsoever what the consequences would be. The amount of mockery, the amount of joking led her to clinical depression. The same day I saw two nuns who shared a bath.
See the invisible man, did you?
No, I didn't see
him. No, you said you couldn't, didn't you? And he went away in tears. Just because he's invisible, no physician will treat him. They just refuse to see him. Terrible. I think the problem is that depression is just sadness, but you turn it into an illness by pathologizing it. It's depression. It's just sadness. Really, when you go and see a therapist, or you know, and you say, oh, I just feel desperate, really. I just think, you know, they should just say, well, I'm not surprised. Life's terrible. Do you want some cider?
But also that... The thing about poking fun, I mean, it's classic, what is it called? Schadenfreude, isn't it? Which is the, you know, getting pleasure out of somebody else's discomfort. What is it, German for shit on a friend? I think it's... Historically, MPs have suffered from mental anguish. Didn't Churchill, he talked about his black dog, for whom I think he then claimed extra meat rations. Ira Madden, the consultant occupational physician at the House of Commons, has said that jokes about expenses and frustration at the new watchdog is damaging MPs' mental well-being. Apparently, some MPs are too upset to get out of bed, let alone perform a U-turn or close down a hospital.
You can probably claim for psychotherapy, though, can't you?
I would have thought so.
Yeah. £150 an hour.
They've got an occupational physician. We don't have one of those at the BBC. Lucky to get a coffee. Douglas Hogg was so upset at some jokes he cried a whole moat of tears and then claimed for a man to clean it. 2 points to Tom. Paul, which legacy has put West Ham in a pickle?
Okay. This is something very close to my heart. At least twice I've appeared on the show and gone on about how excited I am at the forthcoming 2012 Olympic Games in London, because I know what a legacy a massive sports event can leave for a city. You only have to look at Sheffield post the 1991 World Student Games to know that it's been Mardi Gras and Rio every day since then in Sheffield. What they call a white elephant is the Olympic Stadium. Nobody knows what to do with it afterwards. And the only thing that the British public like enough to fill a massive stadium is football. West Ham wanted to buy it, and it turns out they can't buy it unless Newham Council give them £50 million, and nobody knows what to do with the stadium. 80,000 seats is a lot of seats. I've done my research as to what could actually attract that number of the British public, and I'm left with Downton Abbey on ice. I don't know. It could work.
I didn't think it'd be possible for me to be less interested in the Olympic Stadium, but they found a way. Put football in it. Oh, that'll do it.
They could get loads of footballs and put them all in there, and then it'd be like a giant ball pool for all the toddlers in London. And you just, when your kids are bored, you just go there and throw them in the top, leave them there for a couple of days. Gradually, they work their way through to the bottom. Half-starved, tired and emotional. Take them home and put them to bed for a couple of days.
OK, here's a football joke. Are we ready? OK, about which I know nothing. Use of the stadium was fiercely fought between West Ham United, Tottenham Hotspur...
Tottenham Hotspur flower.
Tottenham Hotspur flower. And Leighton Orient. Nothing's been so popular with footballers since Vanessa Perensel. One man! Was it because I said her name wrong? Who is she?
She
was the ex-partner of Wayne Bridge and John Terry had the third.
Allegedly.
Oh, you're a scary man. If the producer's listening, could you get me some protection on the way out?
You should have gone to boots, Sandy. I did warn you.
Thank God that's never an issue. You like football?
Yeah.
You say that, yeah, like it's a normal thing.
It is. I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan. Which will just divide this room cleanly in two.
Really?
Is anyone going to the derby on Sunday?
Yeah. I love a Radio 4 crowd. You cannot get a lot of enthusiasm for a football derby. Are you not?
I didn't even do PE. I was having my hair pulled.
We used to have apparatus, didn't we?
Yes. Well, I remember apparatus. I was never tall enough for any of it. Would like you to jump over this horse. Why? The Olympic Park Legacy Company have announced that the deal to sell the Olympic Stadium to West Ham United has collapsed after extensive delays caused by legal disputes. The stadium will now stay publicly owned. According to the research I've carried out, West Ham United are a football club. 2 points to Paul. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Sarah have got 8 points, but so too have Tom and Paul. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the listings page of the Romsey Advertiser.
Tribute band present a matinee for 11 to 17s and their parents. £8. Includes free earplugs.
And our thanks to Brian Ricketts for sending us that. Jeremy, who waited for a medal and then three came along at once?
Oh, he's a hero, this man. The man in the marathon who couldn't be asked and got on the bus. It just shows initiative. That's what's lacking in this country. It's all, I mean, marathons. I mean, for God's sake, what a pointless, self-flagellating thing to do. You know, I mean, some people do it and that's all they do. I mean, all right, some people just do it so they can pretend they're raising for money for charity when they just want to show off on the internet. But, I mean, some people, like Paula Radcliffe, that's all she does is run marathons. And you just think, well, what's it going to be like when you're like someone like that and on your deathbed, you lie there thinking, well, I taught myself to run a really long way for no reason. And that's the last thing you think as you die. But this bloke, he was running for a bit and he thought, this is a mug's game, this marathon thing. How far is it? 28, 30 miles? That's stupid. There's a bus there. I'll get on that. Nobody questioned him, despite the fact that he was wearing shorts and a vest and presumably had some kind of sash or something. And I think that shows that, really, the rules of marathon running are just ludicrously prescriptive, and people should be allowed to use their... There should be bicycles, there should be cars, gliders. Because when you think about it, people are allowed to wear bouncy trainers. When I used to have to do cross-country when I was at school, it was Woolworths plimsolls, daps, with a quarter of an inch sole. That's why I've got no knees anymore. These days, you can spend £1,000 on the bounciest trainers in the world. And in the Paralympics, they've got wheelchairs and prosthetics and all that, and nobody standardises them. So why not just say, it's open season, you can bring your car, or you can just stay at home and said you did it.
I quite like the idea of this as a way for all sport. Imagine how far you could throw a javelin if you could just stick it on a passing Meals on Wheels van.
You know, if he used his own car, you think, all right, climate change, that's a bit irresponsible. He used public transport, don't forget. Being able to run a really long way for no reason doesn't make you a good person. It means there's a big hole in your life.
Do you wonder if he fell asleep and accidentally won the neighbouring marathon?
he finished third, didn't he?
He finished
third, which if I got on a bus, I'm up and just sat in traffic, it would have been better off carrying on running. How he managed to stay on a bus and still finish on the podium.
Well, obviously, he didn't finish on the bus. That would have been suspicious. So I'm just
I think the real hero is his wife, because it's pretty obvious they use guilty. People witnessed him bursting from the bus to join the race, and he's actually confessed all. And his wife today apparently has said, this is a setup. People are out to get him. He's not guilty of anything. And he must think now, if I'd known she was this gullible, think what else I could have got away with.
I'm with you about the running thing there, Jeremy. I got told off at school. The games mistress said, I know you're not interested in running, Sandy, but stop saying no, no after you.
Cross-country runs, me and my friend used to just saunter and like chat and sometimes eat crisps and stuff, and then we'd get back and the teacher would always say you two were last, but I knew that some of the other girls would stop off and go through the allotments as a shortcut, so I always grass them up. And I would do it again today.
Yeah. Very sensible. Marathon runner Rob Sloan has been stripped of his bronze medal in the Kielder Marathon after catching a bus for the last few miles of the race. Suspicions were raised when he crossed the line carrying his shopping. 2 points to Jeremy. Sarah, who needs to earn more pounds if they put on a few?
Oh, this is the study that women can find overweight men attractive as long as they're rich. I think it's a study of... It's a study of shallow women without ambition or jobs, and it's been carried out by fat rich scientists. apparently it's 10% increase in weight must equal 2% increase in salary. And when I read that, I suggested it to my boyfriend and he said, deal.
But lots of it was said... According to the study, a woman's intelligence can be as important to a man as her looks. That would explain all those magazines on the top shelf with close-ups of women doing long division.
As long as your boyfriend or your partner's a little bit fatter than you, you're champion.
Yeah. Agreed.
That's my rule.
It's all relative, isn't it?
It is. If he puts weight on, so can I.
A study has found that the fatter a man is, the richer he needs to be in order to attract a woman. The report suggests that the average man would need to earn an extra £1,200 for every £20 he gains in weight. The study also found that we are now in the 21st century and that women are perfectly capable of getting a job themselves and earning their own money. Tom, have a listen to this. Tom, who lost their bottle and regained their vessel?
The Italian cargo ship.
Yep.
Who got attacked, taken over, done in, what's the word, had by Somalian pirates. I don't know why they call them pirates. None of them look like pirates. No eye patches. No one had a parrot. Most of them had two working legs, so I don't know how they could possibly still use that word.
What is the Somali for arrrr?
And they got done over by pirates, but the pirates weren't very good, took over the ship, but the crew managed to hide in a safe room, which fortunately has the communication equipment and the steering wheel. The hostages tried to send a message via BlackBerry email that we are captured on this boat, and obviously there was nothing doing there, so they had to revert to a message in a bottle. Mm. But that took ages because they're Italian, so they didn't know which wine to drink first. Argued about that before lobbing the bottle out, and it said on the note, "Come and get us. The pirates are really rubbish. So you can come on no problem and rescue us. It'll be absolutely fine." Now, you simply would write that. You would never say, "Actually, lads, they're arms to the teeth. If I were you, I'd give it a few days. We've got a slab of mint cake and 40 marble lights here. We'll be all right."
I've done a lot of sailing. You'd have to be going very slowly to see a bottle.
When messages in bottles turn up, isn't it like years later when they turn up? I mean, there may well be one floating in there that just says, "There's a hell of an iceberg up ahead, but I'm sure it'll be fine."
And then you get those spam bottles, don't you?
Yes. Sort of.
The crew of hijacked Italian cargo ship the Monte Cristo were saved by Royal Marine commandos after sending their rescuers a message in a bottle. Defence Secretary Liam Fox paid tribute to the Navy personnel involved by taking a holiday in the Bahamas with Adam Warrenty. Rescued and the pirates arrested. The crew have been returned to the ship and the pirates will be appearing at the Sheffield Crucible this Christmas in Peter Pan and the World Snooker Championships. 2 points to Tom. Paul, is it a bird, is it a plane, or is it a fat bloke in fancy dress?
Oh, it might not be fat, but this is a story I quite like. It seems that quite a few places in America have a problem with crime. I didn't realise that because a lot of their states have the death penalty. I thought that was a good deterrent against crime, but apparently no, they do have crime in America and an awful lot of it. Who knew? And so some people have been taking their own initiative. But a guy called Benjamin Fodor was arrested this week for getting dressed as a superhero, getting involved in a fight, and using pepper spray on various passers-by, including various innocent people, it would seem. So not such a superhero, but apparently he's part of a bigger group. And there was a guy in San Diego who calls himself Mr. Extreme, and I'm generally not making this up, a guy in Atlanta calling himself Crimson Fist. The mind boggles, it has to be said.
You can't imagine in the UK, can you? What would we have? We'd have...
Well, they're awesome here, though. And they have names like Swift, Black Arrow, and Vague. Like, what time's Vague getting here? You always said about seven-ish.
Is it a bird? Is it a plane? Could be either.
No, we've already got normal folk dressing up in silly costumes, taking to the street to fight crime without any real legal bite. They are the community support officers.
I quite like the idea of a very British hero, stiff upper lip man. He doesn't say anything, but inside he's fuming. Robin wasn't a good name for a sidekick, do you think?
I don't know.
He was just the unexplained friend who always turned up by coincidence.
A number of vigilantes in comic crime fighter costumes are patrolling American cities. America's best-known citizen superhero is Phoenix Jones, who patrols the streets of Seattle with a cattle prod, pepper spray and handcuffs. Well, you never know when you're going to meet Sarah Palin in a dark alley.
Can you use pepper spray if you're too lazy to use a grinder?
I believe so. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Paul Michael Hillman. We have opportunities for customer services professionals to work with one of the UK's leading banking institutions. These roles are telephone-based, so you need to be a confident communicator and to be able to thieve within a busy, fast-paced environment.
Ms. Milliken.
From the volunteers at Amberley Museum and Heritage Centre. Notice to staff, will ladies please rinse out teapots, then stand upside down in the sink? On no account must hot bottoms be placed on the worktops.
Mr. Reelsworth.
I have one here from Sarah Widette. And it's from the publication Country Life, and the article was a celebration of the artist Edward Seago. Well, it's a portrait, and then this comment was written underneath the portrait of the Queen Mother bought so many of his works that he took to giving her one on her birthday and at Christmas.
Do you know what? I feel slightly unwell. Let's take a look at the final score. Tom and Paul have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Sarah with 13. Before we leave you, here is a screenshot from the BBC Science website sent in by Ian Sowden from Doncaster.
Watch male's genitals developing. You will need flash player.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra with Jeremy Hardy, Sarah Milliken, Tom Wrigglesworth and Paul Sinha. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crooks, Andy Walton and John Hunter, with additional material by Emma Payne. The producers were Katie Tyrrell, Lindsay Fenner and John Pocock.